Hey, thanks for listening to the Dan Time Podcast. I'm Dan McArdle, happy to bring you another episode with somebody who's making a big, big difference in the world. This show, as you know, maybe you don't know, is often centered around me talking with fellow Dans, having what I call Danversations. And that will always be a part of the show. But as you've seen, there are times when I branch out, I bring in somebody from my network or other guests not named Dan that are perhaps tied to my past, tied to my interests, and so forth. And so I want to reinforce that this podcast, Dan Time, is not directly about me. There'd never be an episode where I spend a 5, 8, 10 minute monologue talking about my week and all the irritating or humorous things that happened. That's just not going to happen here. It's all about shining the light on the particular guest. And today, this is a big deal. Just over a year since our last conversation, I had a chance to reconnect with Sean Perry, lead singer and rhythm guitarist for the world's only note-for-note album-quality tribute to Metallica. We met about an hour and a half before they took the stage at Vinyl Music Hall in Pensacola, Florida, Saturday, March 16th. And just like our first meeting, February 2024, episode number 24, Sean was a complete gentleman, incredibly forthcoming, and willing to open up about why he does what he does, what drives him to cover all these highway miles across nearly two decades, performing some of the most intricate songs from Metallica's back catalog that other bands either won't even touch or, quite frankly, can't honor the original versions as accurately as the Four Horsemen. In this conversation, Sean opens up about the past 12 months or so and the challenges he's been through, the grief that he's been through, and the people he has impacted. And I was fortunate enough to see once again firsthand the magic that happens when Sean, Luke, Alec, and Drew take the stage, how they delight and ignite these audiences. I saw fans, young and old, and everybody in between, jumping up and down, banging their heads, pumping their fists, singing the songs. My brother Rob traveled down with his wife Nancy from Birmingham to spend a weekend out at Pensacola Beach and come to the Four Horsemen concert. And we had the best time, as always. And you're going to find out in this conversation why the Four Horsemen have sold out multiple venues on this most recent tour, heading into about a two-week break. It's much more to Sean Perry than just faithfully performing the Metallica classics. It's about spreading joy. And on that note, let's get to the conversation now. You can find links to the Four Horsemen website in the show notes, www.fourhorses.me. Follow this show at Dan Time Pod on the socials, dantimepod@gmail.com. All right, let's get to it now. What a pleasure. What a great guy. It's Sean Perry time. Okay, sitting here once again. Can't believe a year has passed. February 2024. Sean Perry, lead singer for the Four Horsemen, the only note-for-note album-quality tribute to Metallica. And it's a real pleasure getting to do this again, Sean. How's it going tonight?
It's going well. We're a little road weary, but we're ready for tonight's show, and I think it's going to be a good one, despite the concerns of the weather. I guess the Floridians down here are used to this; they're not really all that scared. So, no tornado warnings or hurricanes or anything on the rise. It's just some thunderstorms. So, I think we're going to have a good show.
Yeah, I was just thinking, standing outside, it's a good night to send Marty back to 1985.
Yeah, it's like I said, we we've been out, we've been doing more runs now, you know, and it's growing. It's all growing. We've got a new front of house guy. We've got thousands and thousands of dollars in new gear that's running for production, and now it's nice to see some of the goals I had over the last year come to fruition. So we're moving in the right direction.
Well, your post on social media, there's, I mean, just the excitement that people share online. And then here we are, it's, you know, right before 7 p.m. local time, but I saw the Metallica shirts out here on Palafox Street at 5:30. People are ready, they're excited. Do you see that when you get rolling to towns and you go grab something to eat that afternoon and you see people that are probably going to the gig later?
Yeah, actually, we see it a lot because a lot of times we're out there looking for food as well. And today was no different. We walked down to a Mediterranean place. And as we were coming back, we went to the chocolatier place down the street, which I'm a huge chocolate guy. I love, like, really good chocolate. So I was talking to that guy, and while I was there, Metallica shirts poured in, and some guy came up and said, "Hey, you know, can I get a picture with you?" And I'm like, "Who am I?" You know, but it's funny. It's we see that a lot, but sometimes they don't even recognize us, and we'll just be standing in line with them, and there's like four or five guys with Metallica or Megadeth shirts on, and we're always like, "They're probably coming to the concert tonight." And then usually we do see them later, and like, "Hey, we saw you at the restaurant earlier," and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right." You know, I don't want to interrupt their day or anything, but some people recognize us, and it's always fun. You know, they're always pleasant too, so it's fun to just say hello before the show.
Well, this is, I think, my third time seeing you guys, and you've got to be hearing those remarks from fans that they're saying, "Hey, this is my fifth time or my fourth time," or they're not, anytime they see the Four Horsemen coming to town, they're not missing that date.
I've got people that will email me and tell me how many times they've seen it, and they're coming to the next one. Some lady told me her eighth time seeing us last week, even. And I'm like, you must travel, because, you know, the route we've gone. We did Mercury Ballroom in Kentucky on Friday. We did Bristol, Tennessee on Saturday. We did Pelham, Tennessee, the Caverns on Sunday, which was a really cool place. When we ended up with like almost 500 people showed up to that, which was good for us because we've never been there. And then not yesterday, but the day before Thursday, we played in what was that place called? Southport Hall in Jefferson, Louisiana, and that's 5 miles away from New Orleans. So, and now we're here. So yeah, it's kind of cool to see people, and they'll, you know, they'll tell us out after the show, "Man, this, I just brought my kids this first time." I'm like, "Oh, it's both you guys first time?" "No, I've seen you guys 5 times. I just wanted to make sure my kid's old enough now to come out and see you." And I was like, "Yeah, that's really cool, man." So yeah, it's still got a lot of camaraderie. We love engaging the fans during the show, after the show, at the merch booth. You know, we always say hello and try to, you know, shake hands, take pictures, whatever they want to do. And I think that helps us connect with people better than just, you know, acting like rock stars and whisking off into the night afterwards to go to our hotel or go drinking or whatever. We don't really party or anything, but I feel like they deserve our time. Like, we wouldn't be here if they're not buying the ticket, so we should at least say hello after the show if they want to stick around to do that. So it's more than just come here and do a show and pack it. I like to give people as much as we can give them.
I remember, I wrote this down last time, because folks, if you haven't heard the first episode, I can't believe this is episode number 90, and Sean was on number 24. But he shared a story. I won't tell the whole story, but there was a Metallica fan, Four Horsemen band fan, that had a son, and or maybe she wasn't a fan of the group, but she said, "Can you talk to my son? Because he won't talk to me." And Sean, you were telling me how you've more or less counseled some kids that come to these shows, and they get a lot out of this music. They don't have enough money to go see Metallica on the M72 tour. I mean, who's got? Some people do.
Well, a lot of people do, but yeah, you know, again, with the whole access to the band. No disrespect to Metallica, but they're huge. James can't go out there and be accessible to 60,000 fans. It's impossible. He wouldn't be able to talk for days after that, you know. Me, there might be 600 fans at a venue or 1,000 fans at this venue, but, you know, 75% of them are walking out the door, 80% even. And, you know, we'll end up with, I don't know, maybe 100 people in line at some places, maybe 50 in line at another place. I think I think we were up in Illinois when that mother came up to me and she said, you know, my son loves Metallica, but he like has withdrawn socially and, you know, he's got an attitude and he doesn't want to talk to me or his father, but he loves this music. So I thought maybe this would help open him up if I brought him to the show. Would you be able to talk to him? And I said, absolutely, bring him over, you know. And I talked with him and I was like, okay, this kid's probably having a hard time with life in general. And I had a very hard time when I was a kid, so I could relate to him. And he like instantly like felt like he could trust me and opened up, and his mom was crying and hugging me and stuff. And I'm like, look, you know, I thought this was just going to be a band. I thought this was just going to be, I love playing hard, heavy, fast, aggressive riffs and stuff. And I, you know, I was getting into the singing and stuff, but as the years have gone by, and this is my more than 19 years now, I'll be in June will be 19 and a half years of doing just this band. You see things turn into other things that you never thought it would be. I never thought that I would sort of counsel a young teenager who his mother was like, I don't know what to do. I have no answers for why my son is acting this way. And then I get him to open up because I could relate. And it's like, okay, it's not just a band anymore. This is part of my purpose. And no egotistical, nothing behind that. I realize that if I can help, I should. If I can say something and help someone's day brighten, or if I can help someone open up or give them a hug, you know. I mean, last year, what was that, February that we had this talk? 2 months later, my dad died. I was 12 hours away loading into a sold-out show. And I was with my drummer, Drew, and we were having breakfast, and I was just getting ready to leave, and my brother called me and said, you know, Dad's gone. And this was unexpected. No signs, no nothing. It was diabetes, and he had a hard time regulating his sugar because he didn't eat right, you know. Like, he would just, it's hard. It's hard on everybody to just always be eating right. And so it was a sudden, unexpected death. And my father was the whole reason I got into music. So it tore my heart out, and I had to play a show that night. And my drummer was like, are we going to go home? You just want to cancel the show? And I had to sit there for a minute, and I'm like, my dad would have been so pissed if I would have canceled the show because these people, well, let me back it up. 2 years before this, he almost died. In 2022, my dad almost died. 800 blood sugar. He had pneumonia. He had two arteries 80% blocked, and he was in Florida, and I was in Connecticut, and which is ironic because here we are in Florida now. But I called him because my brother said, Dad's going into the operating room. Like, what the hell's going on? So I called him up, and I said, I'm going to have my wife drive the van and trailer home. I'm getting on a plane. And he said, don't you dare cancel that show on those people. They've been waiting for months, and some people really, really need that. You've got to give that to them. He goes, I'm going to make it. I'm going to be all right. I'm like, no, I'm getting on a plane. He goes, don't you dare cancel that show. And he made it, of course. You know, we had another 2 years with him. And so when I was sitting there at breakfast and Drew asked me, should we go home? I said, you know, I can't do anything for him. He's gone. And there's no way, knowing this, if he somehow knew this, there's no way he would tell me to go cancel the show to be with your dead father. There's nothing you can do for him. So I said, no, he loved this band. He cherished every time he could come out to a show, he cherished it, and he always paid. He never asked to get in for free. So I said, we got to go do this for these people. And that was probably the hardest show I've ever done. It was at Soundcheck Studios in Pembroke, Massachusetts. About maybe 4 or 5 songs into the set, I told everybody in the crowd what had happened, you know, and I said, my dad loved this band, And he knew that sometimes people's only joy throughout the whole week, maybe even the whole month, is to just, I bought these tickets, I can't wait to go to whatever show it is, AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Metallica, whatever, maybe even the Four Horsemen. But he understood that people really, really need that joy in their lives. And for me to cancel that, that meant it was a sold out show. That would have meant 600 people would have been disappointed and sad or angry or whatever. And I thought, I need to give this to them. So I told him about it during the middle of the show. Everybody was respectful and stuff. And the last song of the night, we played Fade to Black. And one of the lines in Fade to Black was, death greets me warm, now I'll just say goodbye. It's like one of the last lines, I think. And when I sang, now I will just say goodbye, instantly a thought in my head, I never got to say goodbye to my dad. And it started to make me like even right now, it's making my, I never got to say goodbye. And it crushed me to finish that song. It crushed me. Well, as soon as the song got done, I collapsed down on the drum riser and I started crying. And I'll tell you this, the entire place went silent. There was no cheers, there was no hooting, no hollering, nothing. Everybody was just standing there. And I think at first they just didn't really know how to react. And then people started calling my name out and like the slowly clapping and cheering for me, you know, like, we love you and stuff. And the band was like, go on in the back, just sit down. I said, no, we're not done. We need to get out and shake hands, take pictures, sign autographs, whatever they want to do. So we went out to the merch booth, and I can't tell you how many people come up, grabbing my shoulder, saying a prayer for me right there, hugging me. We're so sorry. We're so glad that you're here with us, you know. And I just felt a warmth from the crowd, and I was just like, it would have been wrong to not give these people something that they gave me back in return the same night. You know, I needed that support, and it was there. And still, you know, I have a very, this was like a year ago, and I'm like almost in tears over it again. Yeah. But I have to tell you, the Horsemen family of fans are wonderful, beautiful people. And this is my life now. You know, I gave up. I had rentals. I sold them all. I had an IT company. I have no clients left. All I have done for the past several years is focus on this band. And now I feel like every day I wake up, I have to find shows. I have to bring this out to people. I have to help people experience joy with this because they love what we're doing. You know, they love the old Metallica stuff. And I want to give them that. So yeah, it's really, this has turned into my life. Like, this is why I breathe. It's why I get up.
You draw strength from the Horsemen faithful just as they draw strength from you.
Yeah, definitely that night was a testament to that very statement. I couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't expect that. At the end of the night, I didn't expect that silence, but it was almost like they wanted to respect me for, you know, 20 seconds. And then they started all clapping and cheering and stuff, and it's like, wow, man, this is incredible. You know, it was one of the hardest days of my life, but it was also one of the warmest. And, you know, it takes a little something bigger than you to be told that your hero, the person who got you involved in music, the person who from, you know, a very young age was the guy you thought was the best guy in the world. We all think our dads are awesome. To lose that guy and have to go out and act like nothing's wrong when everything was wrong, that really took strength that I didn't even think I had. But when I saw the crowd, when I realized my obligation is here, this is now, I have to do this, I can't falter, it just got me through it, just to know that they needed that. And sometimes it's like you got to put your own heartache aside and do what you're obligated to do, and I'm obligated to spread that joy as much as possible. So, yeah.
Gosh, Sean, imagine people, somebody in that audience that night had a really traumatic week, They had something happen in their lives that, like you said, they're looking forward to that show. They've been looking forward to it for months. Either just go have some fun, blow off some steam, or they've had loss in that year, something like that. And you were there for them. And wow, what a powerful story.
You know, that venue, not to keep going on this venue, I love that venue. We'll always play that venue as long as I can. The year before it, a lady and her son, I think it was either 1 or 2 years before. Either way, it was the same year, because we were playing it 2 times a year. A lady came, and I don't name drop about this, but I'll tell you, her and her son love Metallica. They would come to our shows, apparently always come to any time we came out to soundcheck. And I didn't know this until she had a tragedy. Like, she was going to give us a piece of artwork that she had made, Metallica-esque artwork. And I said, oh, that's, you know, it's beautiful. Bring it out to the show. She goes, me and my son will be there. 2 weeks before the show, her son got killed in a car accident. She came to the show anyway. She said, my son would want me to be here with you guys. And she gave me the piece of art. And I was like, oh my God, you know, it broke my heart. And then the very next year, my dad passes when I'm at that venue. And then the year after, we just, our last show there, my wife's father ends up in emergency room that night when we're, during our show. I see her in the doorway in the side stage, and she's bawling, and I don't know what's going on, and I'm playing for these people. So like between songs, I ran over and she said, my dad's in the emergency room. And I'm like, what's wrong? She goes, we don't know. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I told the audience, and people are like, please don't take this as our place is a black blight on your life. And, you know, every time you come here, something bad happens. I'm like, no, I'm not. It's just the irony. I'm not superstitious, but wow, the irony of that place is like, man, next time I go there, I don't want anything going wrong. I just want it to be a show and we can all just have a good time together. So, but yeah, you know, her father's, he made it out and everything was okay. And it was, you know, a scary moment for us all. But I was like, man, 3 things in a row have happened at that venue, and 2 of them have directly affected my psyche and how I felt I was going to perform that night. But yeah, it's a little crazy. I'm not superstitious. It was just a little ironic, too ironic.
Sean, when I first met you a year ago, and I didn't know any of these stories yet, what you've gone through, what your background was, you know, driving garbage trucks, working in a sheet factory, sheeting plastics, going to school, financing your own schooling to get the IT degree, to start the business, writing the 3 records, all this stuff. All that was new to me. And the night that we spoke, dealing with some back pain, and I was just getting to know you in those few minutes. I'm thinking, this guy is about to hit the stage in an hour and a half and just, you know, deliver on the highest level. How does he do it? What keeps him going? And but talking to you again tonight, I'm reminded of what drives you. And you said something in that episode that is just the coolest thing. You said, speaking of all the guys in the band, we're regular people who want to spread joy. Sometimes people on the, I don't want to say the outside, but they hear this music. It's kind of loud. It's very loud. It's very aggressive. It doesn't sound like what you hear on the local radio station. And people maybe have a misconception of the types of people who love this music, that we're angry and we're evil. And we're actually some of the most caring, dedicated, loyal people. We make up that community. And I kind of see what drives you now, because you get so much out of this and you know people are counting on you.
Yeah, and I do agree with you about the community. I mean, this music, if people are on the outside, let's see, people listen to old-time country. You know, the sad song stuff where you play the record backwards, you get your dog back, your house back, your wife back. They may not look at this music and say, that community is a very close-knit community that respects each other and has good high morals or whatever, because they would listen to the music and go, oh, God, that's scary stuff to me. But in the metal community, first of all, our stuff was never mainstream. If you wanted to hear it, you had to find it, right? Like when you and I were growing up, it was cassette tapes, it was vinyl. There was no internet. We didn't have pagers and cell phones, and we didn't even have microwaves. You know, I'm dating myself, but I mean, I don't care. I mean, we were the tightest community you could find musically, because we had to stick together to share the music with each other. All the underground bands like Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, Anthrax, they wouldn't even exist if we weren't sharing tapes, buying their stuff and sharing it with our friends. Because the records companies, or the radio stations, I could say, they didn't want that stuff on their programming. That was devil music. Like, you know, what you would think the typical stereotypical thing would be for us was like, oh, these people are a bunch of devil worshipers. And it's like, dude, we're just normal people too. We just like different style of music. Doesn't mean we're bad people. I mean, I know guys that are surgeons that love Metallica, love Megadeth. I know guys that are in IT. I know guys that do all kinds of technical type of job. I mean, I was in the IT field myself. I met all kinds of people that were like, oh man, you're in a Metallica tribute, that's awesome. And you know, they're professionals. You know, yeah. I used to have short hair and and I wore khakis and a polo and, you know, sometimes suits to work. You know, I understand. And then there was the other jobs I had, like you said. You know, I drove a recycling truck and I had to wear, you know, Carhartts in the wintertime to stay warm. And it's just whatever, man. I think the community is made up of everyone. And you think about this, I mean, I like classic rock. I like a little bit of death metal. I love thrash metal. That's my thing. But I like even some country stuff I can listen to and say, man, that guy's really like Brad Paisley. That guy can shred on guitar.
He can.
Solos. And if you doubt me, go on YouTube and look up Brad Paisley shredding on guitar. It's amazing. The guy is gifted, and it's like you have to respect that as a guitarist, because he could rip a bunch of metal guitar players a new asshole if he wanted to.
My kids love the Cars movies, and he's got a track on, I think, the Cars 2 or 3 soundtrack, and it's all instrumental, and it's just metal riffing.
Yeah. He's an amazing guitar player, a very, very gifted man. And but he played country. That was his thing. But that doesn't mean he can't play other styles, and probably doesn't mean he doesn't like other styles, because if he's doing a soundtrack that sounds more metal, then obviously we know the answer is he's not just a country guy. He's just varied in his tastes and what he likes to do. And same thing with me. I mean, I've written blues songs before that would never put out on my old metal albums because it just didn't fit the format. You know, but yeah, I used to write blues stuff. I mean, who doesn't like blues? Come on. I mean, metal's kind of based off of that, to be honest. But yeah, you know, the community is tight. The community is respectful. And I think that well-rounded in like the type of human beings that you're going to come across if you come to a metal show. We get all races. We get all creeds. And we don't care. If you're there, you're a brother or you're a sister. And that's all it's all about. It's just, so when you say, you know, what does drive me? When you talked to me last year, yeah, that was a maybe half a month after I picked Luke up. That's what hurt my back. It still hurts, yes. But not, I mean, I've been going to a chiropractor for a year because of that injury. But yeah, I was fresh out of thinking I was 25 again, and I picked him up side stage between sets at the House of Blues Cleveland, which was the last show my dad ever was there alive for. And I just totally pulled something in the middle of my back, and it's like, man, I'm still feeling that today. Thankfully, not nearly as much pain now. And now it's just, you know, a dull pain. But yeah, I get driven by the the pure energy of what's going on. I don't listen to my body at that point where it says, you know, you've been in this squat stance for 2 hours. Your legs are on fire here, buddy. Or your back is killing you. Or your throat is like really swollen because you're doing all these kill 'em all and you're, you know, screaming all the kill 'em all lyrics. I'm like, I don't care. I'll do whatever I have to do to get through that show. And if it means that I have to squat down and look like James, even though I'm not nearly as tall as James, I will do it because that's what the fans paid to see. I do not want to waste their time. I don't care about the money. you can always make more money. I tell people this all the time. I can never give you your time back. So if you enjoyed the set, I did my job. If you didn't, then that's the worst embarrassment that I could have, is I didn't try hard enough. I'll tell you this, we do not phone it in. We will never phone it. If someone in my band phones it in, I will be up their ass, and they will not do that shit again, because the fans deserve the fucking best.
You were talking about Luke, and I've seen the way that he maneuvers that stage. I mean, he's running circles around the place, and tell me again, the bass.
Alec,
the chemistry that they have. Your drummer, Drew, I noticed last time, folks, I won't give any details away, but if you love some of the Black Album songs, come and hear Wherever I May Roam and how this is delivered in the punch that the Four Horsemen give that song, that particular song. The set list kind of mixes around, changes around night to night. How do you decide? Is it while you're kind of on the road, let's mix these two songs around. Let's start with this one. How are you coming up with the set list?
Actually, it's really simple. I'm an IT guy, so everything is saved on my computer. I have set lists that are 13, 14 years old for certain venues. And what I do is I look at Vinyl Music Hall. Okay, last year we played these songs. Some of these songs I still have to play. You don't get to go through a show without playing Enter Sandman or One. I have to play those songs. Master Puppets, I have to play that song. Other songs like Wherever I May Roam, I could swap that out for The Unforgiven or Don't Tread on Me or Nothing Else Matters, or, you know what I mean? So what I do is I take out last year's set, I put it on my screen, and I put another one up in front of me, and I say, okay, we're going to swap 6, 7, 8 songs so that the people who came last year, if they kept my set, they're going to see that I didn't just throw them at the same songs again. I try to mix it up and make it fun for them and say, oh, you didn't play this song last time. No, he didn't. And you remember that. You remembered that. And some people say, oh, you played the song that I asked you to play last year. I'm like, that was luck. I didn't remember that. It was luck. There's too many songs. There's too many shows. Too many people asking for this or that. Sometimes I get lucky and guys are like, you remembered. I'm like, yeah, no. But I do get lucky sometimes. But, you know, it's all Black and back. It's all 1991, back to 83 so far. We occasionally throw in stuff that's outside of that format, but usually it's one, maybe two songs.
Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah, we've done Whiskey in the Jar. We've done Helpless. We've done Megadeth even, you know.
Done King Nothing or something like that.
Long time ago. Not with this lineup. I used to do King Nothing and Fuel. And I think we're going to probably bring those back in, but that's going to be for like fairs and festivals where it's a very, very family oriented event and they, you know, possibly don't want to hear Fight Fire with Fire blasting over their Ferris wheel. So yeah, I'll lighten it up for that stuff. But I mean, it's not going to be a whole set of like, you know, Load, Reload, Saint Anger. We don't do anything off Saint Anger. Probably never will. I don't like the album. Don't tell James I said that. Now, you know, to that point though, James was on an interview one time and I remember him saying, he goes, you know, I'm not going to write the same album for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And that's the understanding that I have now of some of the Metallica. People are like, oh, what do you think of this album? What do you think of that album? What do you think of this album? I'm like, dude, I like what I like. And my opinion means jack. It's my opinion. So if I don't like this song or I do like that song, neither opinion should weigh on you in any shape or form. If you like what's going on and you want to come to the shows, great. If you don't like it and you want to see some other Metallica tribute because they play all the new stuff and you like the new stuff better than the old stuff, then you're going to go to that show. So I, you know, my opinion doesn't mean jack shit. And I don't push it on anybody else. But when people ask me, a lot of times I'll give them a straight answer. But I won't put it out there publicly. Oh, this album blows. Why would I do that? You know, that's just going to piss off Metallica fans. And Metallica knows who we are. They absolutely know who we are through other people in the industry who know who we are, who are friends with Metallica. And one of those guys is Brian Wheat from Tesla. You know, he's a dear friend of mine now. He's talked to them about us, and I didn't even want him to do it. I just don't want to get shut down. My whole thing is, and I don't, we're not a threat to Metallica. No band is a threat to Metallica. But my whole thing is I don't want to ruffle feathers. I don't want to piss anybody off. I'm just looking to do what I do. I'm grateful to do this. I'm blessed that we have people who even want to come and see us. We have a lot of haters out there like, oh, Metallica's still touring. What the hell do you think you're doing? And like, I'm doing what I like. That's what I tell people. They're like, oh, you're not James Hetfield. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm an entertainer. That's all I am. I'm just an entertainer. I'm a clown at a clown show. I am. I didn't write the music. You know, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, they didn't create the circus. They're just recreating it for people all over the world, right? That's what we're doing because Metallica's not coming to Vinyl Music Hall. I guarantee you that. They're not coming to Soundcheck Studios. They're not coming to Clyde Theater. All the places that we play, Metallica will never show up. Maybe one of them will and just watch the proceedings, right? Which would be an honor. I don't expect it. But if they came out, they're going to get the same show that anybody else gets. I'm not scared of, you know, if all of them walked into our show, I'm not scared one bit. I've been doing this almost 20 years. I'm ready for it, right? And they're gonna get the same show the rest of the audience would get. And I hope that they would enjoy it. That's all. So, yeah, it's about spreading joy. It's about being an entertainer. And I'll tell you, I'm very, very grateful and very, very blessed. And the rest of the guys feel the same way because we could all be back doing regular jobs. And that would just be our life. But we're fortunate that people want to see this band. So,
I think if they walked in, like you said, I just want to call out Drew for a second. What a dedicated professional. I kind of have an affinity for drummers. I tried to play. I played with some guys. Never played in a full-scale band, but I like drums. His dedication to, again, the note-for-note honoring of the catalog, he's all over it. He's locked in, and you guys just have a chemistry. Again, Hetfield is... he's Papa Het these days. It's no knock on him, but you're not going to go to a show and see this 1988, 89, 90, 91 version of Hetfield that I think a lot of fans would probably say is maybe the best era, best version.
If you're asking me, yeah, of course it's the best version because that's what I grew up on. You know, I don't know if I told you this last time, but the music was something that really saved me mentally when I was a kid. We might have touched on this before, but like I get so passionate about playing this stuff as closely as my abilities will allow me to play it to the album. How did it sound on the album? What was the tone? What was the aggressiveness? Was it all down pick? Was it alternate picking? What was going on with the drums? Like my father was a drummer and a singer. So like you, I gravitate towards drums as well. Drew is a very, very gifted and maniacal, like very driven. He has to have it right. Like it takes him forever to learn a new song. Disposable, Damage Inc, Blackened, Fight Fire with Fire, Dyer's Eve, you name it. Like I relish playing those songs because I know he's going to have my back on that and it's going to be crystal clear. But yeah, that's the thing with us is like I want to give people that older vintage Metallica experience. We don't do the Papa Het version. I know some bands out there do, and they like to, you know, they wear the vest with all the patches on it, and they got that old-time microphone that James sings through now, and I'm like, no, that's not us. We are the pissed-off, broke, our van just broke down with two flat tires. We're that Metallica. We're the hungry motherfuckers that want to go out there and just take over the world type of Metallica show. And I think a lot of people enjoy that because I've even asked the crowd, what do you want to see tonight? Do you want to see Papa Het or do you want to see Pissed Off James? And I always get a huge roar when I ask that question. They want the Pissed Off James era. They want, now I won't do this, but take a swig of beer and spit it in the crowd. What's up, motherfuckers? Yeah. That's what they want. And I know that they want that. And like, we have kids in the crowd, so I keep it toned down and I don't spit liquids into the air. But I know that that's the kind of show we're going to bring to them, and they're going to love it, you know. And we have parents all the time bringing kids to their show, little kids, like 2 to 18.
Tonight's all ages.
Yeah, so we're going to have kids in the crowd tonight, and their parents are going to bring them up. I had a father last year. His daughter had some kind of Ride to Lightning. I think it was like a whole skirt. It was incredible. It had lightning all over it and shit. And I was like, dude, that's amazing. He goes, this is her first show. And I'm like, oh. And the thing that kills me too, Dan, is it was so weird when people first started saying, this is my kid's first Metallica show. This is their first time seeing Metallica. I'm like, we're not Metallica. Don't tell your kid that, you know. But I didn't want to say it to the parent, but I was thinking in my head, I'm sorry. You know, this is not Metallica. This was $20. And it's, you know, it's a 600 cap room. But I stopped trying to correct parents because I'm like, who am I to give them their opinion? It's their opinion. They thought they just saw Metallica. Well, if you think that, that's wonderful. That just means I'm doing my job right. That's all. I'm never going to, that's never going to drive me and say, we're Metallica one day. That'll never happen. I don't have that kind of ego. I wouldn't be that arrogant. But it's such a compliment. You know, it warms my heart when people are like, they liked it that much. They called it a Metallica show. You know, it's like, this was Metallica tonight. I'm like, well, maybe back in the day, it could have, reminded you of a Metallica show. But it's very humbling, very honoring. I'm glad to bring it like that. But it's really cool. At the end of the day, it's very cool.
Well, Sean, I could keep talking and talking, but you guys have a show to play tonight. What are some of your favorite places? You've been all over the place. Where's a particular part of the country that you like, or a gig that stands out the past few months?
Oh, geez. I would say Clyde Theater in Fort Wayne, Indiana, is a kick-ass venue. It's top-notch. It's brand new. And it's not even brand new, but it's got that brand new feel because they're just meticulous on how they keep that building. The entire facility is immaculate. The sound equipment there is incredible. It's all from Sweetwater right down the road, the headquarters. And we love playing that venue because they treat you like you are the band. And the fans are very, very energetic out there, very respectful. I don't think I've ever seen a pit, and I don't really try to create pits. I don't like pits myself because people get hurt. We just had a pit in Michigan, I think, right before my birthday, and somebody split their head open, and I was like, that's why I don't like pits. You know, you get hurt. But Indiana, we have great crowds. Michigan, we have incredible crowds. The last 3 years running, two of the venues, Machine Shop and District 142, we've sold them out 3 years in a row, both places. One's a 550 cap, the other's an 800 cap room. Incredible. Incredible response there. Virginia in particular, Tally Ho Theater in Leesburg, which is like a little north of Washington, D.C. Those guys, that's a 600 cap room, and they sell it out as well. I think the last three times we sold that one out, and we've been playing there twice a year. Now, we're not playing there this May, because Metallica is going to be at the stadium with Virginia Tech, where the football guys are. They're going to be there, I think, in April. And so we talked with the owner, and he said, yeah, it might not be a good idea, to compete with the real thing. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to split our fans up, because it's a lot of money. If they're going to go to Metallica, they're going to drop a lot of money, you know. And I feel like asking them to do that, to come to our little show, as well, is like, it's too much. So I just figured, why don't we usually do May and November at Tally Ho. So this year we're just doing November. And I talked with the owner about this. So Virginia is such a good crowd for us that I said, give me the Friday and the Saturday, and we're going to do our own no repeat weekend. And he said, do you think it'll sell? And I said, yes, because I'm going to release the set lists ahead of time. I'm going to show people what they're getting, but I'm not going to show them what night, what song. You buy one ticket, it's going to be double what the price of one regular show would be, right? So if it's a $20 ticket, it's $40. But here's the kickers. You're going to see the set lists. It will be nothing past the Black Album. It will be the first five albums. Kill 'Em All, Ride of Lightning, Master Puppets, and Justice for All, Black Album. We do like one song off of the EP, the 598 Garage Days, not Garage Inc. Mm-hmm. We do one song off of that. As far as Help, we do Helpless, and sometimes we break out Am I Evil or Blitzkrieg from Kill 'Em All, but they also threw that on Garage Inc. And I had people telling me, oh yeah, it's on Garage Inc. I'm like, no, it's on Kill 'Em All. I have the cassette to prove it. So the other thing I was going to say about our no repeat back-to-back weekend at Tally Ho, I think it's like November 21st and 22nd, is that Metallica plays 16 songs. They release their set lists all the time after the shows, and you can see it's always 16 songs. we're going to play a minimum of 21 songs per night, back to back. So you're going to get, instead of 32 songs, you're going to get 42. You're going to get 42 songs that weekend. And for like $40 pre-sale, I think it's a pretty good deal. And so does the owner. And he thinks, you know, we could probably sell this out. And I was like, of course we will. You know, the Virginia fan base we have are so loyal that they were upset we weren't playing in May. And I said, but Metallica. And they're like, we don't care. And I'm like, well, that's, I don't know. I mean, would 600 people say they don't care? I don't know. But I said, we're going to wait. But we're going to give you something special for waiting. So this is the only time I've ever tried this. And I hope that it is a sellout. And I hope we can maybe move that to other markets that we're really strong in, like Michigan, for instance. That would be another one I would try it in. But yeah, there's been so many different markets, like the Vixen in McHenry. It's another one, 800 cap room. I think we've sold it out a couple of times, and good markets. So, you know, I'll go anywhere where they'll have us and they'll show up in decent numbers.
Well, and back and black. I was starting to say back and black.
I know that's the rub. I just
But Metallica has gotten around to playing most of these songs, the first four or five albums, at least once, with the exception of some of the Black Album stuff. I don't think they really go back to Struggle Within, My Friend of Misery, but you guys play Eye of the Beholder sometimes. They have not played that song, to my knowledge, since 89 in its entirety.
I can also tell you another song they won't ever play again is Escape.
Escape.
We play that often. We play it often. I like the song. James was forced to write one more song for Ride of Lightning. That was Escape. It pissed him off. He said he wrote it in like 5 minutes, and he was like, I don't ever want to play a song again. Well, it's on one of your best albums, and people gravitate towards that old stuff, and they like it. Now, the vocals are extremely hard to sing. That might be one of the other reasons why, because, you know, it's a higher register song. If you think about singing it the way he's singing it, it's hard to sing it up there, especially when you're tired at the end of the night. But it was... If you're asking for acceptable metal on that album, that's probably one of the more acceptable songs. Yeah. As far as the tempo and the demeanor of the song, it wasn't. Guitar solo was awesome. I mean, Kirk was a monster back then. He was so articulate, so clean, and so fast. He was probably playing like every other hour of every day. But yeah, those songs, I mean, Eye of the Beholder, yes, we break that out. Damage Inc., we break that out. Struggle Within, My Friend of Misery, Escape. Motor Breath. I want to get the guy. Here's the one song that I want to get into this band is Metal Militia.
Oh, yeah.
That song, I've not seen any tribute band even attempt it. We used to play it when I had a different lineup years ago. But you have to, it's Dave Mustaine wrote that.
Yeah.
And you can tell because the riff where they're singing over top of, it's like thunder and lightning, and I'm like, yeah, that's a Dave riff. You can tell it's in his blood. It's a challenging thing, but I go over these songs a lot, and that's one song. Even though we haven't played that song with this band, God, probably a decade, I still play that at home because it's such a hard song. I would have to start from scratch again and relearn because you have to start screaming before you start singing.
Yes.
Because it's Thunder and Lightning.
Thunder and Lightning.
The Gods Take Revenge. Well, Thunder and Lightning, it's all scream. And then The Gods Take Revenge, Senseless Destruction. And then Vecton of Fury. So I'm like, okay, this is ass backwards. You don't get any time to warm your vocal up to that. You got to hit it, like, right off the bat.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Love that. So that's a song that I personally have told the guys, we will be putting that back in the set list. And the breakdown in the middle, and it climbs. So there's so many technical aspects of that song. I'm like, I've touted this band as being the one that's going to play all the songs the rest of them can't play. We have to do that song next. That's like one of my, like this year, I want that song done and in the set. So I think it's going to happen. Because I said so.
Well, whatever songs, whatever set list you guys put together, you're blowing people away every night. You're getting new converts, if that's the way to say it. And from whether people are 16 or 66 years old, they look forward to these shows. They make a big difference. in people's lives, whether they got a lot going on or they just have had a rough week at work or they've lost a loved one, but
or just want to go out and have a beer and have a fun time anyway. You know, it's not all about loss or struggle. It's just camaraderie and what a vibe and energy in the room. It's electric, you know, so people, they gravitate towards what's exciting. And so do all of us, right? You know, I love exciting stuff.
Yes. All right, Sean, well, you got to go. And I want to say one more thing. This maybe was something your dad could have instilled in you, but if it's going to be, it's up to me. You said that on our first conversation. I love that. Such an awesome takeaway. I've heard that before, but it's worth repeating. People listening, if you're thinking about something, if it's just sitting in that idea stage and something's holding you back, get after it. Put that plan together and follow whatever's driving you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you have an idea and you think you can or you think you cannot, either way, you're right. And I think that was a Henry Ford quote, not from me, but I mean, I never really understood, you know, these little phrases that would, you know, famous people had said until you live it, until you really live it. And it was like my life was shambles back when I was 32 years old. I was so broke and so hopeless. This is like, I have nothing to offer. I can't even offer anything to myself. I couldn't pay my bills. I lost a house to foreclosure, you know, lost a car to repossession. I lost a fiance. I lost everything that mattered to me. And it was like, at some point you just got to say enough, and I'm either going to just be a pathetic person or I'm in the most, you know, I'm in the country with the most opportunity in the world. I can do something if I put my energy and my focus towards doing that and not hoping someone else is going to just give it to me. You can't go through life with your hand out, because you're going to go through life at the end of a highway ramp, and that's not the way you want to end up, you know? So it's like, I've been there.
You had everything stripped away and you kept it.
Yeah, I lost everything. Everything. I mean, even after I built myself up, I still lost almost everything that I had gained. And I had to start over again at 40 years old. So, you know, and I'm not afraid. That was 10 years ago. I'm 50 now. I just turned 50 in February. So it's like, even when you are having things go your way, it can still fall. All of it can fall apart. And it did for me at 40 years old. I was like, oh, got to start over again. That was only 8 years after I got myself through school and started making myself, you know, an IT career. So yeah, you have to rely on yourself, because you're the only person who's never going to let yourself down. Everyone else will at some point in one aspect or another. It could be big, could be small, but you're the only person that you can rely on at the end of the day to get it done. And that's how I live my life. So there you go.
Well, come out and see the Four Horsemen. If you're on social media, Instagram, it's the Four Horsemen Official.
In Instagram, it's Four Horsemen Official, and our website is www.fourhorses.me, as in me, my person, me. And we're on, you know, Facebook and Bands in Town and all that. You can get our links. All of our links are on the website, fourhorses.me.
If you only know one song, two songs, three songs, come out, bring a friend with you, bring your girlfriend, your boyfriend. You're going to have not just a blast, you're going to create a lasting memory, and you'll want to come back next time they come through town. And going almost 20 years in, good chance he's coming back to your town. Yeah, thank you so much, Sean.
You're welcome.
This is awesome.
Good to see you,
looking forward to seeing you tonight. And you guys have a great week. Go out there, make a difference in somebody else's life, and be good to yourself. We'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast.